You know, the Bush administration and even the media like to portray the U.S. as sort of being in a defensive position in Iraq. You know, the U.S. troops are kind of defending themselves against the insurgents. I mean, this is nonsense. An aggressor has no right to self-defense. You know, if an armed robber breaks into your house and you try and kill him, you're guilty of nothing. But if he kills you, he's guilty of murder. So you can see from this that the reason for the reluctance on the part of the U.S. to admit that their invasion was about oil, because it's an admission that it's a war of aggression, that it's a war to plunder the resources of another country. It's like an armed robber breaking into your house and trying to steal your possessions and killing you and your family in the process. Now, astonishingly, I've noticed recently, some people are now sort of, in fact, I've encountered this reaction in my book. Some sort of right-wingers have said, well, yeah, it's a war about oil. What's wrong with that? They seem almost indifferent to the fact that that's utterly a violation of international law. And international law, whatever, you know, is by no means perfect, but I mean, we've got to remember the alternative is no international law. It's a kind of a law of the jungle. And I find it amazing that analysts are so willing to kind of just toss it aside as if it has no importance. It's not even really part of the debate. In fact, here's one way that a very well-known and apparently respected analyst commented on this subject. Thomas Friedman in the New York Times, columnist, international affairs columnist, big supporter of the war. He actually addressed this question about oil, and he said in January 2003, he said, I have no problem with it being a war for oil if it's accompanied by a real plan for energy conservation. You know, this is unbelievable. In other words, it's okay to kind of abandon the whole body of international law that was set up after the Second World War to prevent another nightmare like that, as long as we have a kind of energy policy to go with it. Now, having said all this about the focus on oil, let me just quickly say that I don't think for a minute that it was just a war about oil. In fact, I would argue that it was also a war about flexing the U.S. muscle more vigorously in the world. It was a war about reshaping the Middle East, about removing an intransigent foe of Israel. But I would argue that it was also very much about oil. And I think maybe to set this up properly, I should put it in a broader context of how important oil is. I mean, oil is absolutely key to the global economy. It's not only a source of tremendous wealth to whoever owns it, but it's a key to economic and military power. I mean, going all the way back to World War I and World War II, the countries that had access to oil, which were basically the countries on our side, were the ones that ended up winning those wars, and it was actually quite pivotal. But particularly since 1973, with the energy crisis and the Arab oil embargo and the temporary cutback on oil supplies to the West, there's been a huge psychological impact of that energy crisis and what followed. And the U.S. has been absolutely determined to never leave itself in a situation where it felt vulnerable, as it did, back in that 73 situation. And since then, there's been a real push to gain control of the oil reserves in the world, which are heavily located in the Middle East, and that has become a very important focus of U.S. strategic interests. In fact, right after that energy crisis in the mid-70s, there was a sort of a flurry of interest pushing on the part of sort of right-wing forces in the U.S. to take a more aggressive stand towards the Middle East and actually go in there and get control of the oil. There was, for instance, one article in Harper's Magazine kind of summed up a lot of this. It was it was called Seizing Arab Oil, and it advocated sending in about 40,000 U.S. troops and seizing some of those little oil sheikdoms. It was written by a guy called Miles Ignotus, which in fact was a pseudonym for the real author, who was Henry Kissinger. So these kind of ideas were floating around at the very top levels. And there was a real move in that, starting around then, to refocus U.S. military power away from, you know, its base in Europe at that point and move it more down to the Middle East. And in 1980, Jimmy Carter declared something called the Carter Doctrine, which essentially declared the Middle East a sphere of U.S. influence. But the thing that always held this back and prevented the various scenarios the U.S. drew up, and these were actually drawn up at high levels within the administration, but the thing that always held back actual invasions was the existence of the Soviet Union, which of course made the idea of actually invading very problematic. Now, with the demise of the Soviet Union, that opened up new opportunities. And in fact, you know, starting in the early 90s, we see this small group of radical Republicans organized themselves into a group called the Project for a New American Century, which basically wants the U.S. to flex its muscles more in the world now that the Soviets are out of the picture. And the other thing that they're very focused on is overthrowing Saddam, and they make that very clear. They write a letter, an open letter to Bill Clinton in 1998, urging him to overthrow Saddam, and they specifically mention the importance of oil. Now, this group, you know, would just be another think tank, except once the Bush administration gets into power, it turns out some of the key members of this group, like Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, and Paul Wolfowitz, end up in top positions in the U.S. administration. So they come into power with a determination to get rid of Saddam and get control of that oil. Now, another huge important factor, I would argue, is the dwindling oil reserve situation that we face in the world. And I want to point out we're not about to run out of oil immediately, but it's important to note that oil is a finite resource, and there's only so much of it. And in the last 14 decades, since we started using oil, we've used up roughly half of all the oil that there is in the world. And the problem is that we keep consuming ever faster. So at the rate we're going, we've only got maybe another 3 or 4 decades left. But the problem is even more urgent than that, in that the real problem is that the first half of the stuff, the first half of the oil supply, is the stuff that's easy to reach. The top of the barrel, it's easy to scoop out. It's the kind of stuff even Jed Clampett can get out of the ground. You know, it's after you get to that about halfway down. This is a concept that geologists call peak oil. After you reach about the halfway point in your supply of oil, it starts to get more and more difficult to get at. It's deeper under the ground. Perhaps you have to go under permafrost, or you're just going after the oil fields you've already been going after, but you're getting deeper and deeper into the bottom part of them, and it's just getting harder to get it out. So what that means is that, first of all, it means a number of things. It means that, oil prices are going to get more expensive as it gets harder to get the remaining stuff out. But it also means that what's left of the easy-to-scoop-out stuff becomes all that much more attractive and all that much more valuable. And it so happens that much of that, in fact, almost all of that easily scooped out stuff, is located in the Middle East. And this is something that Dick Cheney, before he was the vice president, was very cognizant about, very focused on. In fact, I got copies of some of his speeches when he was CEO of Halliburton, you know, the big oil services giant, and he talks about this a lot. These, didn't get much coverage back then, but he talks about, there's a speech that he gives to the London Petroleum Institute in 1999. He talks about this problem of the world's declining oil reserves. And he's talking about, in the meantime, there's this tremendous rise in demand for oil. So he says, you know, by the year 2010, we're going to need something like an extra 50 million barrels of oil per day, a huge increase in the amount of oil we'll need. And then he sort of raises the question, he says, now where is all this going to come from? And then he answers his own question. He says, the Middle East, that's where the prize ultimately lies. And he's absolutely right about that. And particularly in the Middle East, the prize ultimately lies in Iraq. And the reason for that is Iraq is really quite unique. First of all, it's got the second largest supply of oil in the world after Saudi Arabia. But unlike Saudi Arabia, its oil reserves are almost completely untouched. Because for historical reasons, all the conflict that's been there in the last few decades, almost no development has taken place. So Iraq has this sort of ample oil reserve, and it's virgin territory. You know, I talked to a Wall Street oil analyst, and he was saying, Iraq is the superstar of the future. He says it's bigger than anything Exxon's involved in. He described it as the big dance. Everyone wants to be there. Well, the problem was that the U.S. hadn't been invited to the big dance. In fact, the U.S. oil companies were about to be excluded from this one big remaining oil bonanza left in the world in Iraq. And that's because throughout the 1990s, the U.S. had, or the U.N., but primarily through the instigation of the U.S., had imposed sanctions, very severe sanctions against Iraq, trying to sort of cut it off pretty much from the world. And this prevented any kind of investment in Iraq's oil industry, which was rapidly deteriorating. But to counteract that, Saddam had been very busy negotiating with oil companies from France, from Russia, from China, from countries all over the world, except the United States. And the deals that he was making were that as soon as UN sanctions were lifted, these companies would be able to immediately begin developing Iraq's oil. And there was something like $1.1 trillion worth of oil deals in the works with these foreign non-US companies.